It's time for What's Up with Deputy Leader of the Opposition, Dr. Shane Reti.
Morena. Dr. Reti, how are you this morning?
Morena, Zoe. Good to speak with you. Cold like the rest of the Wellington region. That's how I am.
It's actually Rachel here, but it is very freezing up in Auckland as well, although I guess we can't complain as much as you folks with your big waves as well down there too.
Well, look, it is what it is, Rachel. So, you know, we just make our way with it, put something warmer on and get on with the day.
We absolutely do. Well, let's talk about COVID first off the bat. Another change for Wellington, moving back down to level one. We seem to have dodged a bullet here, hopefully. Obviously, advice is still to absolutely monitor if you had been in any of those spaces that those cases had visited. But we have seen some perhaps rightful criticism from epidemiologists who said we should have acted faster to close that bubble off. Do you agree with that, or do you think we should be doing that in the future?
So there's several things here. We don't have all the information that the government has, and so all we can sort of draw conclusions from is what's in public domain and the actions the government takes. But let me just come back to two points. First of all, you talked about locations of interest. And one of the issues, and it came out of the Northland outbreak as well, is are we getting absolute transparency with all of the locations of interest? Because, you know, people need to know if the infected people have been in other places and we're not being told. I would suggest that's not a good thing. And there's some suggestion that the case may have been at one of the Vic University libraries, and that this hasn't been disclosed. Well, we know in the Northland case there were four locations of interest that weren't disclosed. There was a hairdresser, an Airbnb, a testing station, the general practice. And I just come back to make the point, if the government wants a good response, you need to have some trust with people. And the argument that, there was only a few people there, or there was a good booking system, doesn't wash, because I'm concerned about couriers who might come into the property or waste management who are emptying some of the waste at the end of the day from that location and might well want to be double gloved. So I think we need to have some trust there. Second thing is, the issue we're discussing is less of an issue if we've got a good vaccine rollout. So if we look at the three pillars that will define how well our economy recovers, it's going to be the border, it's going to be how robust our community response is, and then how well vaccinated we are, what level of penetration we've got to the vaccine rollout. And that's something we should have some control over, because remember, we were front of the queue. And yet here we are at the lowest level of vaccination rates per 100 in the OECD. And I think this is a really important point. Our recovery and our resilience to any cases that do come across the border are going to be predicated somewhat on how well vaccinated we are.
We have seen, you know, it explained, I guess, quite transparently and backed up by health providers that a lot of the slowness, I guess, with the vaccine rollout is to do with waiting on vaccines from Pfizer at the moment. Obviously, when we start to ramp up, we're going to really have to see some quick spreading of the vaccine rollout. But I just want to touch base on the issue of the border a little bit more, because that's a very present problem. Do you think we need to be seeing tighter restrictions at the border, particularly when it comes to our travel bubble situation with Australia? Is that something that we should be focusing on, particularly with the transmissibility of the Delta variant, which is taking over in some of those states in Australia?
So you heard yesterday the consideration that pre-departure testing for what had currently been our exempt countries would now look to be introduced. And if we recall, almost this time last year, we had to drag the government king and screaming to pre-departure testing. They would not get there, and we worried for if it wasn't just because we'd suggested it. You know, a large number of other countries were saying you need to do pre-departure testing. And here we are in this past 48 hours, the exempt countries, primarily Australia, will now have to do pre-departure testing, which is a good idea to tighten up our border. There are still things at our border that we need to look at. We need to be more transparent with how many people are in the border workforce, how many have actually had their two doses, because what we know from about a week ago, it would appear that there's 3,800 border workers who haven't been vaccinated. So what happens to those 3,800? Is it just, you chose not to, or you weren't at work that day, on you go? Or do we place them in positions where they're at less risk in their workspace? It's just not clear to us what's happening with several thousand people, border workers, who haven't been vaccinated. And there's a risk right there. So, you know, I think there's better things, and our spokesperson, Chris Bishop, is litigating this.
How would National encourage faster vaccine delivery? Is there anything that we aren't doing at the moment that we should be doing, given that we are still waiting for doses to arrive?
well, if that's the first point, we shouldn't have been waiting. The decision we made to bring vaccines on board, which was around about July, August, as I recall, last year, we should have made sure that we had secured supply. We know what the number was. The number was 5 million. We need 10 million of the Pfizer-AstraZeneca vaccine. We need 5 million of the Janssen vaccine. That number's not a mystery. And so as we came to be locking in supply, we should have locked in guaranteed supply way back then, first point. Secondly, up to this point, there's been queues to get the vaccine. And you'd have to wonder, why have primary care not been more engaged? I was out at a practice in Bull this week, and they're one of the few practices who have actually been vaccinating from Easter last year. But across the board, primary care, and by that I mean pharmacy as well, you know, your trusted people who you'll take advice from about getting vaccines anyway, so, you know, we'd pick up the compliance rate, they haven't been engaged until very, very late in the piece. And no jurisdiction overseas that's been successful has been successful without involving primary care earlier.
Well, we've got some big topics to talk about this morning, so let's move on to chatting about the hate speech law reform proposals that have come out. Now, Judith Collins has promised to reverse these proposals if National was to be in power. Specifically, what is the National Party concerned about with the reforms that have been put forward by the government, which are open for public consultation until August the 6th?
So this is a significant overreach. It's an overreach from what the Royal Commission was recommending. They were recommending some legislation around hate crime, and the government has gone down the legislation chain and decided they'll bring hate speech into this as well. The threshold for what qualifies as hate speech is very, very murky. I mean, even the Minister and the Prime Minister are at odds with various examples put to them as to what was that going to qualify for hate speech. Is political opinion inside or outside of the barrier for hate speech, the interjections in the House in 4 hours' time, are they all going to come under hate speech? And we're just of the view that this is an overreach and that the thresholds would be more around inciting violence rather than the murky push down into areas that are just so uncertain it will be a nightmare for judges to make any decisions on. And this is a significant overreach from what the Royal Commission asked for, so we would repeal them.
So is the National Party satisfied with how our laws currently stand in terms of protecting human rights and preventing violence against particular groups?
Oh, look, there's work to do. And let's remember there is some legislation already in place for incitement of violence, and of course the Digital Communications Act, which came in under our hands, Amy Adams actually brought that in, also talked to these areas. It's always a work in progress, but this is far too far, far too fast.
Well, let's talk a wee bit about Oranga Tamariki, because this has been quite a big story that just broke yesterday, and you are the spokesperson for children for the National Party. We've seen some very shocking videos of the mistreatment and manhandling of children in Oranga Tamariki care facilities by workers from those facilities. Do you agree with the Children's Commissioner, Andrew Beecroft, that these institutions should be immediately ended? I believe he used the word bulldozed.
So I think what needs to happen first is there needs to be an immediate stock take to see how pervasive this sort of behaviour is. Secondly, there needs to be immediate retraining or refreshing as to what is acceptable restraint practices and what is not. And then thirdly, there needs to be some reflection of where was the government oversight of this? Why did it need a whistleblower to take some risk to bring this out? What's on the other CCTV tapes and other high-risk environments? Should that be being scrutinised here today as well? So I think we need something in place today. And then the medium-long term is, which is what Judge Beecroft may be talking about, what is the management of high-risk environments for those who may or may not need restraint? But here today, let's do an inventory. Is there anything on the existing tapes before they're wiped that we need to be concerned about? And let's immediately retrain and refresh once we've determined that the MAPA policy is still the most appropriate. And if it is, let's immediately refresh and retrain and then gather ourselves and figure out what the pathway forward looks like.
The last thing I wanted to touch base with you is another bit of law reform that we're seeing come through at the moment, and this is around the Resource Management Act, which has been scheduled to be changed. This is a 30-year-old bit of legislation that has been quite embattled since its inception. A lot of the conversation at the moment seems to be around maybe less about what the RMA itself was, but about how it's been implemented. What are you hoping to see in new resource laws? Because I see Judith Collins has called the current proposals from the government, I think, wokeism was her words there. What is it that the National Party is actually hoping to see?
The RMA, no one, if you recall, in 2020, no political party said they were happy with it and they would move on it very quickly. If we look at the functional implications of a piece of legislation like the RMA that is no longer fit for purpose, the most immediate would be around housing. If we want to see a handbrake on our housing dilemma, then look at the RMA. And the challenge here is that at least 6 months ago, Judith put on the table, we would meet urgently. An urgent select committee was even what we put up so that we can get through at least to address housing, and then we can set some sort of guidelines around how the rest of the RMA could be looked at. In fact, Judith has a bill in the ballot box to exactly that effect. So we understand the urgency of the need to change the RMA, but the government just doesn't seem to want to come to the table. I don't know if they quite get the urgency that New Zealanders have, and that certainly we have as well. So we want to see that urgency lifted up. We'd like to propose that what we put in the ballot box is a good starting point, and we need the government to really start moving things along.
Now, as you mentioned, housing is a really major and very urgent part of this, but I'm quite interested in another conversation that's kind of come out of some situations that are happening here in Auckland at the moment. I'm thinking of the Dome Valley landfill and Putiki Bay, highlighting these, that there's perhaps an issue with the way that consultation processes reflect the interests of Māori interest groups and iwi and hapu groups. There's been some criticism that perhaps the current resource management consent processes don't necessarily accurately reflect all of the interest groups. Do you think this needs to be something that we see a focus on in any kind of reform going forward?
Look, I think this talks about the general nature of the RMA as it currently is interpreted and its fitness for purpose. And these are some of the things that need to be considered in any review of the RMA. Are the key stakeholders identified? Do they have a legitimate and fair say in proceedings? This is what a review of the RMA should consider.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Dr. Hiresi. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in about a month's time. Take care until then and stay warm.
Good to speak with you. Kia pai tōra.
Kia pai tōra.
That was What's Up with Deputy Leader of the Opposition, Dr. Shane Hiresi.
Thank